Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lam, and on today's show, we have Navid Najafi, and he's a three-time Nahoku Hano Hano Award winner for hip-hop. And of course, he's here to talk a little bit about innovations in music. Hey, Navid, I want to welcome you to Bite Marks Cafe.
Hey, how's it? So nice to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, we'll get a little bit into like how we met, but I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, I know you're at the Shangri-La, but you know, when we first met, you were talking about rap music, and I got to see you perform, and I kind of want to get a sense as to who Navid is, and how do you mix some of your sort of cultural, your where you're from, and the music, you know, that you produce.
Yeah, no, thank you. I guess start at the beginning. I was born in Tehran, Iran, and grew up in Iran until I was 8 years old, and left with my family. This is in the late 80s. Left with my family, and we ended up moving to upstate New York. I had an uncle who was living there at the time, so you usually go where you get family, right? So we went to upstate New York, and I lived in New York then from about 8 years old till I was 18. So I graduated high school, actually until 11th grade, and then my senior year of high school, moved down to Atlanta, Georgia. With my parents, we had an auntie and an uncle who were living down there, and so I went my senior year of high school in Atlanta, and then I came to Hawaii right after high school. My older sister ended up moving to the Big Island in Kona, and this is, you know, in the mid 1990s. She had a friend that she grew up with in New York who was living there at the time. She went to visit, ended up staying. I went to visit my sister. And ended up staying for, I was supposed to be there 2 weeks, ended up staying for about 4 months, you know, and was very lucky to meet Hawaiians right away. I mean, some of my first friends that I made were Hawaiians who taught me about Hawaiian culture, Hawaiian history, and, you know, being from Iran, I felt such solidarity and familiarity, I guess, with the culture here. And it was something that I was really missing my whole life, really growing up in New York, you know, exposed to all kinds of culture and music. And that's where my background in music and hip hop was really embedded. But in the sense of like cultural aesthetic awareness, protocol, you know, things that I learned growing up in Iran and things that I continue to learn from my family, because that was a big thing. My parents were always adamant that we first never forgot where we're from. We spoke our language, Persian or Farsi, at home. So I was always very closely connected to my culture, even though I was physically displaced from my home. And then coming to Hawaii, I felt familiarity here with Native Hawaiians, and then learning about the history of Hawaii, you know, especially the political history of Hawaii, you know, really just expanded my awareness of this place and built even more opportunities for connection, because so much of our history, you know, over the last 200 years on this planet, so much of our history is shared as well.
And I just found it quite fascinating that being from Iran and the fact that it's very much in the news, you know, in our current sort of, I guess, geopolitical situation. And to have you perform and hear the music and have, you know, you express the music in a way that was very pertinent to what's currently happening in Hawaii.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought that it was kind of an interesting not only juxtaposition, but, you know, sort of the relationship between having been part of a very sort of, I would guess, maybe you can share more about it. You know, life in Iran. I mean, how was that? How did that influence your sort of activism?
Yeah.
It kind of transferring to Hawaii, your feeling that, I mean, I would have guessed, given the fact that, you know, you spent so much time on the continent, that it might be a little foreign, but you were able to embrace the culture here and feel comfortable and make friends. And actually, you know, what I was drawn to was the fact that, you know, we met over at Puhonua Waimanalo, Nation of Hawaii, and you fit right in, you know, and, and you were telling me a story a little bit about your interest in connecting.
Yeah.
And so you were on the Big Island, you ended up coming to Oahu, staying on Oahu, and you know, working at Shangri-La, so it's all kind of connecting, and you're staying connected.
Yeah, I mean, but just to back up what you started with, Iran is currently in the news. I mean, Iran's always been in the news my whole life. You know, it's a part of just the reality of who I am and who we are as Iranians. You become politically active at a very young age, right? So I was born right during the revolution in Iran, where the former dictator of Iran, which was the Shah of Iran, was overthrown by a popular people's revolution, which then got sort of quickly co-opted by Islamic fundamentalists, and the Islamic Republic is what was born out of that, which is another form of dictatorship. And I saw, you know, the most horrible things being done to people in the name of religion. And so, you know, and being a young person in Iran at the time, everything is in public life, everything is controlled, right? So you have to act a certain way in public, and you act a different way in private. You get to actually be yourself, right? So there's a public-private reality. So as a kid, you learn that really quickly in terms of what is acceptable in the home versus what is acceptable outside. So you have to gain awareness. Awareness is critical for survival in that type of environment. And also, you know, I credit my parents. They were always very aware of what was happening in the world. And most people in Iran, and I think globally, most people are very aware of what's happening around them and internationally. So like, for example, my dad used to tell me stories about like political movements around the world and dictatorships and like Chile and Pol Pot in Cambodia. So as a kid, these were kind of like my bedtime stories, just learning about like what was happening throughout the world. And, you know, I credit again, like I said, my dad was just a student of politics, of philosophy, of religion. So I was really lucky to come up with that.
And at what point in time did hip hop kind of enter into your form of expression?
Hip hop kind of came into my consciousness super early, while we were still in Iran. So when the Islamic Revolution happened, 1979, almost everything that was foreign became illegal, right? So foreign music, foreign media, you were not allowed to have records, let's say, of Western music, Western movies. But obviously, of course, these things existed in society, you know? This is where, like, the underground, and I'm putting air quotes when I say underground, because the definition of underground in the Western world is very different than underground in places like Iran, like literally hidden. Right? You have to hide these things. So we had access to movies, to music, all that stuff, but you kind of had to keep it hidden. And I lived in an apartment building. It was about an 8-story apartment building, 2 apartments on each floor, so about 16 units. And then we had an apartment manager on the first floor who had a VCR in his apartment. And then that VCR was wired to like the majority of the houses or the apartments in the building. Right. So we basically all watched the same thing. And I think the way it worked is that families would choose, okay, this night we're going to watch, you know, we're going to choose what to watch and so on. And so in that setting, I remember seeing the movie Breakin'. That was my first sort of exposure, I guess, to hip hop culture. And then also my older cousins were all breakdancers. Like breakdancing and hip hop culture was a global phenomenon, you know, and the movie Breakin' was the first sort of Hollywood attempt at capturing hip hop culture, like kind of commodifying hip hop culture. And that movie spread around the world. And so I got to see graffiti. I got to see breakdancing, hear hip hop music. And at the end of the movie, I don't know if this was the 80s VHS only or if anyone else remembers this, but there was a tutorial basically at the end of the movie with some of the actors showing some basic like pop lock and breaking techniques. And I remember the next day after watching that movie, we're all trying to break dance. And then my older cousins, my older sister, who's been a major influence in my life, including coming to Hawaii, right? She came here first. They were all break dancers basically overnight, right? So that was my first memories of hip hop culture. And then moving to New York, that was one of the only things that I had familiarity with in right. this new environment. And we had just moved to essentially like the hub, the mecca of hip hop culture. Right. And so I gravitated to that very quickly. And I always kind of credit music and hip hop specifically for helping me even learn how to speak English, because I was listening to music and, you know, we're talking like Run DMC, Public Enemy, like, you know, those mm-hmm, groups. Mm-hmm. I had a cassette tape of Run DMC. It was a mixtape. There was some Run DMC, some Public Enemy, a little bit, I think DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, and, you know, some stuff on there. And I would memorize the lyrics and I could mimic them. Like I could rap along to it before I even understood what I was saying or could really actually hold a conversation. And that's how I made my first friends, you know. I was the weird, quiet kid on the bus, knew, didn't know what was going on, and heard music and gravitated towards that. So it was music and sports, and specifically soccer, which is huge in Iran. We call it football, you know. But those things helped me sort of make sense of this new environment I was in and to be able to actually make friends and build community.
Well, you got me thinking about a whole bunch of questions I want to ask you. You know, getting to the name of Illmatic as one, like how did that name come up? But let's hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with Naveed Najafi, three-time Nahoku Hanohano Award-winning hip-hop artist. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Furniture Plus Design.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. I'm Bert Lum. And if you're just joining us, we're catching up with Naveed Najafi, three-time Nahoku Hanohano Award-winning hip-hop artist. Naveed, your name, stage name, Illmatic. I do want to ask you a bunch of other questions too, but I got to remember to ask you this: how did that name come up, and what is Illmatic?
That's a great question. So my friends in middle school, high school, you know, we started to kind of get more involved in graffiti culture, and in I was trying to rap. It started for me with poetry. Actually, I was just writing poetry. Poetry is really important part of Iranian and Persian culture. So growing up, my grandfather used to recite, you know, Sufi poetry of Hafez and Molana, who was known as Rumi in the West. So, you know, poetry and in my culture, like a clever turn of phrase or a clever way of saying something, a memorable way of saying something is highly valued. Mm-hmm. So I always gravitated towards that. And maybe that's why I gravitated towards hip hop. You know, I was never a singer. I've never really been an instrument. Like, I can't really play instruments. I tried violin in school and because my grandpa played violin, too. But something about the rhythm of rap kind of and the being sort of steeped in poetry kind of led me towards that direction. But when we started getting more involved in that, one of my friends said, you should call yourself Nomad. You know, we were thinking of like names for our tag or graffiti names, right? Because you're a nomad, you're a traveler from mm-hmm. the other side of the planet. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Nomad, kind of playing around with that. And the Illmatic part is actually a multi-reference, one to the classic Nas album, Illmatic. And hip hop heads always get that part. But then one of my favorite rappers of all time, and especially growing up, was Black Thought from The Roots, who's like, you know, it's on The Tonight Show now. It's pretty amazing to see that. But Black Thought had one of his many nicknames was Ill Poetic. Uh-huh. So it was kind of a play on Ill Poetic and Illmatic. And I had the Nomad already. I was like, oh, we're going to go with Ill Nomadic. And just, you know, and that's the thing about hip hop that, you know, when I'm speaking with young people today and they're asking me, what advice would you give? My advice is always just to be original, right? So that was the thing in hip hop back in the day is you didn't want to sound like anyone else. You didn't want your name to sound like anyone else. You wanted to be very unique. But then, you know, for me, it was the play on Illmatic, this classic album that everyone knew. Mm-hmm. So it was like paying homage, like a nod mm-hmm. to my favorite album and my favorite rapper, but then something that was uniquely me. And then also that name is something that I think I strive to live up to. And your previous question from earlier was, you know, like we met up at The Nation and you said that I fit right in. I mean, one of the most important things that I was taught by my family and by my culture is, you know, it's very important to be a good host, right? And hosting and having guests over to your house is such a huge part of Persian culture. Like if you're in Iran, people will literally fight each other to see like whose house you're going to go to and who's going to get to feed you. And so being a good host is really important, but being a good guest is just as, if not more important. So when I came to Hawaii, you know, I recognized right away that I'm a guest here, right? And to be a good guest means you have to, one, honor your host, you know, don't make trouble, make sure you're helping out, learn the truth about the place that you live, learn the history of the place that you live. Mm-hmm. And that a lot of that also came from my dad. And then be able to speak up for that truth and you know, be an ally. But allyship, I think, you know, in our kind of Western understanding, doesn't go deep enough, doesn't go far enough. You know, for me, allyship means, and this is a quote from the great Dr. Cornel West. He says, you know, being an ally is one thing, but then sometimes you got to get in the band, you know, mm-hmm. and he references Miles Davis's band, and he had Max Roach, the drummer, who's white, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But he's in the band, he's making the music, right? So I think it's really important to understand your position, right? So I am always very aware I'm not Kanaka, and I never want to take space from other Kanakas. And what I value the most is learning as much as I can and helping to uplift Kanaka voices and helping to uplift Kanaka stories while I'm also representing my own culture and community, right? And one last thing I want to say about that is the time that I've spent with Hawaiians, which is the majority of my life now, and the things that I've learned about Hawaiian culture and witnessing what's been happening in the Hawaiian community over the last 25 years or so, it's been amazing, but it doesn't make me want to be Hawaiian. It actually makes me want to be more Persian. It makes me want to learn more about my history, my culture, my traditions, so that as I'm receiving so much knowledge that I could reciprocate and I could share it back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you said something earlier, too, that I want you to share a little bit about. The fact that, you know, when you were growing up in Iran, and of course, living sort of the life of the public life and then the private life, and
yeah.
and then your parents sort of giving you the history and the stories, and you feeling that people in Iran were really politically astute. Yeah. I mean, they kind of knew what was happening.
Yeah, you have to be. Yeah.
And then when you came to Hawaii, you probably noticed that people don't necessarily, the general public, I'm speaking yeah. very generally, don't want to get involved. They don't want to. Yeah. They don't want to get out their voice, their opinion. They don't want to stand up for what they feel might be right. I mean, and of course, in Iran, it might have been a little bit more dangerous to do that.
Right.
But do you have any observations as to why it might be the way it is in Hawaii?
You know, again, over the time that I've been here, I've seen the growth in terms of the activation of, you know, the history of Hawaii being spoken about more often, being told in different spaces. And when I first, you know, moved to Kona, this was in the late 1990s, I remember hearing, you know, rumblings of Hawaiian sovereignty, mm-hmm. right? And again, I was really lucky to just meet people that were you know, practicing their culture, right? So I learned about Hawaiian culture before I learned about Hawaiian history. And I think that's sort of important to ground it in the cultural understanding. And for me, it was very familiar, right? So it wasn't something new. But overall, I would say Western culture, right, sort of has this ability to sometimes ignore what's happening politically, right? And I'm not making a value judgment on like whether that's good or bad. That's a different conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It is a bit of a luxury to have the ability to not be aware mm-hmm. of what's happening mm-hmm. around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But also with the understanding that, you know, most people are just trying to live and survive and mm-hmm. feed their families, and they don't have the time. I mean, who has the time to learn about every political movement that's happening around the world? And to, you know, be fully aware of that. But I think it is really important to understand the political reality of the place that you live and to participate in that and to make sure that at least you're knowledgeable about it. And for me, that's why I was really, it was important to me to learn about Hawaiian history, learn about the history of the Hawaiian kingdom, you know, and I still share that as often as I can with everyone that I meet. It's important, especially folks that are new to Hawaii or you know, who visit Hawaii. I end up hosting a lot of artists through my day job with the Shangri-La Museum. We host artist residencies, and whenever those artists come to Hawaii, it's really important for them to learn about the history mm-hmm. of the place that mm-hmm. they are. So I think, you know, again, it's that ethic of being a good guest and then also being a good host. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a global thing. I think it's a Western thing as well, that it's pretty much our global culture to sort of be reluctant maybe to speak up. But there's mm-hmm. moments. Mm-hmm. There's moments, right? And I'm very encouraged also by the younger generations. You know, the younger generations are always questioning, right? The younger generations are always pushing. Sometimes they push too far. Sometimes they're not pushing far enough. But I think as older folks, it's really important to be able to create spaces for dialogue with younger generations and to show them in a way that, like, yeah, adults are also asking questions. Like, we don't have everything figured out. Like, you remember when you were a kid and the moment you realize, like, adults don't know what they're actually doing. And it's discouraging, and it you know, leads to disillusionment oftentimes, and kids disconnect, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. What I've learned most in Hawaii is also political consciousness is so connected to land and to understanding your environment. Right. The more you can be embedded in the land. And that's why, you know, the work that folks at the Nation of Hawaii and, you know, many other spaces throughout Hawaii, bringing kids into those spaces that they can connect with the land and have an opportunity to learn their cultural traditions and protocols through a direct relationship with the land. Having that as a foundation for political awareness, I think, is really, really critical. And I see that happening in Hawaii for sure.
Now, you know, one of the things that I was quite impressed upon is the fact that during a film festival that they did up at the Nation of Hawaii about 50 years, Kaho'olawe, yeah. and you started off with a rap, which I hope you can maybe recreate a little bit of it here. So we will...
Which one did I do, Bert?
I think, was it Victorious?
Maybe. No, I think I did... Yeah, I usually in those spaces, I like to start with a verse that I wrote for a song that I did with the Paniolo Prince and Queen Maile from Molokai. Shout out Paniolo Prince and Queen Maile. We did a song called Never Leave This Place.
So let me give you a chance to do some of that, and we'll hold that thought. And then we'll be right back after a short break to continue our conversation with Navid Najafi, three-time Nahoku Hanohano Award winner. Illomatic. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Chaminade University.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Navid Najafi, four-time Nahoku Hanohano award-winning hip-hop artist by the name of Illomatic. Now, Navid, would you be able to, like, you know, maybe share a little bit of hip-hop with us? And like,
yeah,
I said,
of course.
You know, what you did at the Nation of Hawaii, kind of introducing the night to this film festival, I was listening to the lyrics and it was very, you know, very pertinent. So, I forget the name of it, but you know, whatever you recreate, I think would be very appropriate.
No, I appreciate that, and I think as an MC, we've been trained to just be able to perform on the spot. You know, you get called out, you got to come through.
Okay.
So that's also what, when we do workshops with kids, that's something that we try to impart on them, is like, if you say you are that thing, you have to be that thing all the time. So appreciate the opportunity. Yeah, so I think the verse that you're talking about, I'd like to open my set with nowadays, is the one that I did with Paniola Prince and Queen Maile from the song called Never Leave This Place, where they were telling the story of why as Kanaka they never want to leave Hawaii and why it's important to stay in Hawaii. So they contacted me and asked me to give my perspective of what it's like to have to leave your place, right? So this is the verse I wrote for that song. With honor and deepest gratitude, now I speak to Kanaka, who accepted and allowed me to eat. As a refugee, took me in and taught me to keep my ancestors in tune with every step of my feet. So even though we had to leave, our lives were at stake. Geopolitical pawns for a murderous state. My family all torn apart from the greed and the hate. But we never gonna forget that our people are great. But wait, I still carry the weight. The depth of the sorrow is the hardest to break. The longing for land left behind in the wake. This the diasporic trauma of a people displaced. So listen, nah, don't ever leave this place. Paniolo Prince Molokai is the base. Keepers of the ancient ways of time and space. Rebel headquarters rise like a mighty wave.
That's great. I have to. Now, you said you're four-time Nahoku Anohano.
Yeah, that's brand new. That part's brand new. So just a couple of weeks ago at the 2026 Nahoku Hanohano Awards, mm-hmm. my group, the Super Groupers, we put out an album last year with an artist named Punahele. Shout out Punahele 695 from Makaha. And a longtime collaborator. You know, we've all been making music together for the last 15 years or so. And we put out an album just last year, and it was nominated in the hip-hop category, and that's the one that we just won most recently.
Oh, right on. Congratulations.
Yeah,
now,
thank you.
Again, you know, I was quite impressed by the fact that you were at the film festival, and it turns out that, I guess last week, Saturday, was the Aloha Aina Day, which is, you know, usually the last Saturday of the month over at the Nation of Hawaii, and it was a whole full-on La Ho'i Ho'i'ea kind of event.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was a little bit of... you know, working the aina, you know, doing some, you know, working the lo'i, and then there was food, obviously, you know, lunch, and then you guys performed.
Yeah, and we performed, yeah. So for the last 10 years, actually, I've been organizing with the folks at La Ho'i Ho'i'ea, organized the main celebration at Thomas Square, Imai Kalani Winchester. The last 10 years, we've worked together with DJ Lethal Selector, Liloa, to do a concert to celebrate and honor La Ho'i o Ho'i'ea, because this is now a month-long celebration, right? So there's events all throughout July. And where we met at Nation of Hawaii was the film festival that was, you know, a part of this celebration. So this concert series we started called Aha Mele Ea. We've done it the last 10 years. And this year we decided to take it up to the Nation of Hawaii for their Aina Work Day that they partner with Sustainable Coastlines Hawaii. They do it every last Saturday of the month. So in honor of La Ho'i Ho'i'ea in the month of July, we took the music, the Aloha Aina music, up to Pu'u Honua Waimanalo and performed there. So it was myself, Mr. Kapu, Ina Lihi, Paniola Prince, Queen Maile, and then we also had Maka and the 808 Ohana perform as well.
No, it was great, and I really appreciate the fact that you not only performed there, but joining me on the show today. And, you know, I would like to have you share, where can people find out more information about you and your music and, you know, check it out?
First of all, I want to say thank you so much for the invitation. It's been awesome to get to know you, and you do such amazing work. People can find me on all the streaming platforms. If you look up Ill Nomadic, Illnomadic, my social media is all Ill Nomadic as well. Or you could search up the Super Groupers as well.
I'll put that up on our show notes.
Right on.
Naveed Najafi, prominent Honolulu-based hip-hop artist, activist, educator, four-time Nahoku Hanohano Award winner. Hey, Naveed, I want to thank you for joining me today.
Mahalo, bro. Thank you so much.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk about the meta layer of the web. If you miss any part of this, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HPR on every Friday or anytime via the HPR app or your favorite podcast application. In the meantime, you stay safe. You stay awesome. We'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.